You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined by Rob Rang. Thanks for listening in. We've got a jam-packed, free agent-centric Wednesday episode coming your way, so let's get to it. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It's now March 3rd. We're only a few weeks away from the legal tampering period kicking off, and there are plenty of teams that are negotiating with players. In a couple weeks, they will legally be allowed to do that. And so we're getting very close to free agency, and there's been a storm brewing. You and I have talked about it a bunch, Rob, that a lot of teams right now are over the cap. They're trying to figure out how they can scramble to get some financial flexibility opened up. And so we've started to see a flurry of activity here in the last 24 hours, some big-name players getting released by their respective teams. And it feels like right now we are just at the tip of the iceberg. There's going to be a lot more activity here in the next few weeks. And I believe the Seahawks can be one of the teams that benefits most from all of these cap casualties going on around the league.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, Corb. I think for several reasons why Seattle could be one of the big beneficiaries of this time period. For one, as we've talked about so many times, Seattle is one of those teams that is very much up against the cap, or at least appears to be so, with a little bit of massaging, a little bit of changing some salaries into signing bonuses and things like that. Seattle should be able to fix their salary cap a little bit. Number two, of course, you have a spectacular quarterback in Russell Wilson. That is right off the bat is going to draw some potential free agents who might be looking to take a little bit less money for the opportunity to win right now. And so because of that factor, you have that draw. You have a very charismatic head coach, of course, in Pete Carroll. You have a passionate fan base. And then also you have a general manager in John Schneider who has very much shown more of a willingness to sign some of the players that have been released. And so therefore they don't have to sign a player in free agency and then lose some of those compensational picks in the future. And so I think that this is all reasons why that any of these big name players that you are seeing being released by other teams right now, those are some of the players that the Seahawks, I think, are very much going to be kicking tires on them, so to speak, to see if they might be fits in Seattle.
And the Seahawks, we've talked about this time and time again. Yeah, they only have $1.5 million in estimated cap space, effective cap space that they can use outside of their rookie class. And that's not even enough to give a tender to one of the restricted free agents. But when you look at most of the remainder of the league, nearly half of the league is over the cap right now. So really the Seahawks are in a better position than a lot of these other teams are to be able to do some maneuvering and then go out and get some players. And you mentioned the compensatory picks. That's a big component in all of this. John Schneider did not get any of those comp picks last year. I could see the Seahawks, if they're able to sign several of these players that get released by their teams, like, say, a Gabe Jackson, we'll talk about here in a minute. But if the Seahawks are able to sign several of those players, you don't have to worry about them counting against the compensatory formula. If they lose a bunch of free agents, which it's very possible that a number of their key free agents will be gone, we could be looking at the Seahawks next year having an exact opposite situation in the draft. They are going to have a lot more draft picks to begin with, barring trades of those future picks. And then you could have up to four compensatory picks coming their way as well. And there's going to be other teams that are trying to take advantage of this too. So I would expect there's going to be a run on a number of these players that have hit the market. The biggest question is going to be, how much money are these players going to be looking for? Because I guarantee they're not getting anywhere close to the money they were making in the contract they previously had before they were released.
Yeah, that's the thing. It will be fascinating to see what a Gabe Jackson might receive. Of course, he is a Pro Bowl guard, still very much in the prime of his career, and a guy that has been successful throughout his career. So it's going to be interesting to see what he might be able to get on the open market. We saw what J.J. Watt just got in a two-year deal going to the Arizona Cardinals. And there's so many good players who have these bloated contracts that NFL teams are going to be talking to him over these next couple of weeks, trying to get them to possibly do an extension, possibly do a salary cut of some type to be able to keep them on the team. But I think that you're going to see a lot of players who basically are going to kind of fall into that idea of the grass is always greener and look to go elsewhere. And so I do think that you're going to see a number of really good players be suddenly released out into unrestricted free agency over these next couple of weeks. And again, it's going to be interesting to see if the Seahawks are able to take advantage of that opportunity.
We look at some of the players that have been released in the last 24 hours. I'm going to throw this name out first because Kyle Rudolph was a player a couple years ago that there was some speculation the Seahawks might be willing to trade for him. Now he's been released by the Vikings. He is 31 years old. He hasn't had more than 400 receiving yards in a season since 2018. Last year had just one touchdown reception. He'd have six the season before. I still think he is a solid tight end. He's not what he used to be, but there's going to be a lot of fans saying, isn't that what we just had with Greg Olsen? Rudolph, kind of a similar situation, not as old of a player, but certainly he is now on the tail end of his career. Hasn't been quite as good the last few seasons. But again, if you can bring him in cheap, I don't think you're going to have to pay him $7 million like you did Greg Olsen. That money's just not going to be there from other teams. You certainly could do worse than bringing Rudolph in. I think he'd be a nice fit in Shane Waldron's system. And then, of course, you've got Jared Cook, who was released by the Saints today. He's a different style tight end, but he still has the ability to stretch the field, even though he's going to be turning 34 years old soon. He still is a guy that can cause defenses problems, especially because of his size, still a decent athlete. So there's some other tight ends now that are going to be thrown into the mix that might interest the Seahawks. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Gabe Jackson, to me, in the last 24 hours, that I think the Seahawks should have perked up the most about hearing that he is now available.
I agree. I think that, again, guard is a huge concern for the Seahawks. And so I think that Gabe Jackson has to be one of the players that they're intrigued by. But then you mentioned tight end. I mean, when you look at Seattle's tight end, the players on their roster at the tight end position. I mean, you have Will Disley, you have Kobe Parkinson, but Jacob Hollister is a free agent. Obviously, Stephon Sullivan has moved on. Greg Olsen is retired. You talked about the fact of the offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, and we know that all of the success that the Rams had at the tight end position, kind of using both Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett basically to complement each other. I think if the Seahawks are not planning on bringing back Jacob Hollister, then I would certainly expect them to find a similar type of a player as a Hollister who has a very similar size and skill set, in my opinion, as, say, Gerald Everett. And if Seattle is willing to spend some kind of big-time dollars in free agency, then maybe a Jonnu Smith. But you look at these guys who are a little bit bigger, like a Kyle Rudolph, for example, 6'5", 260 pounds. He is not the elite stretch the field, go down the seam kind of a guy, but he is very physical at the point of attack. And to me, he is still that kind of security blanket tight end. And as you talked about, I mean, his statistics are not overwhelming, but you look at Minnesota's offense, where, of course, he has played all these years, and that's an offense that is very much reliant on the action that they're getting at the wide receiver positions, what they're getting at the running back position. And so to me, Kyle Rudolph has been one of those steady Eddie types. That is exactly what the Seahawks have looked for in the past, the tight end position, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. You mentioned Greg Olsen. A lot of Seahawks fans would basically say you're doing the exact same thing, whether it be Greg Olsen, whether it be Zach Miller, similar type of players. But those are the true reliable type of players. If Seattle is looking for a third set of reliable hands, then, a player like Kyle Rudolph, or Jared Cook, as you mentioned, might be exactly what you're looking for and still being able to get them at a relatively bargain basement price.
Yeah, and Jackson, like I said, he's really the one from this group. You can look at those two tight ends, and I expect the Seahawks, at least with Rudolph, I expect that they will kick the tires and they'll see what's the asking price. What are you looking for in a one-year contract? But Jackson's the player of this list that intrigues me the most because he's still going to be just 30 years old. He's still a fairly young player. He's played both right guard and left guard. And what he really is good at is protecting the quarterback. You look at his Pro Football Focus grade since he came into the league, he's never been lower than 19th, and he's been a top 10 blocker in the pass protection department a couple of times in his career. He has 5 seasons. He's given up one or fewer sacks as well. You can't tell me that wouldn't make Russell Wilson excited. if you were able to bring a player like that in, that, like I said, I believe is not going to come close to the salary point that he had at the Raiders. They saved $9.6 million releasing him against the cap. I don't see him getting a contract like that given the current financial climate. So you might be able to get a really good, versatile guard at a cheap enough price that you can afford him, even with Seattle's salary cap constraints they're dealing with. You could put him in, plug him in immediately at the left guard spot where he played his first couple seasons in the league. Again, he's played both spots. He's a guy that fits the build that Mike Solari's looked for. He has played in an outside zone scheme under Tom Cable the last couple years. Has been a bit more of a struggle as a run blocker, but I don't think that this is a player that I would necessarily say that that eliminates him from contention, because he is a really good guard that I think has shown that he can at least fit into a system that way. And his pass protection skills, to me, that's what really jumps out. That's what you should be focusing on. I need to get a proficient pass protector that can keep my quarterback, Russell Wilson, clean.
Yeah, and he is one of those kind of guys. You used the expression before a couple of days ago, talking about offensive linemen, who's kind of the rock'em sock'em types. And Gabe Jackson is that. I mean, he's a little bit of a brawler in there. And he comes from the SEC, you know, against elite competition. That has very much been what Seattle has focused on with their selections and with their, you know, Brandon Shell, of course, being from South Carolina as well. You know, you're looking for those kind of guys who are the top level of athletes and who have done it at a sustained level of success the way that Gabe Jackson does. So yeah, I think that you were hoping that Gabe Jackson fell in love with the West Coast, playing for the Oakland Raiders before they, of course, made their move to Las Vegas. You hope that he fell in love with playing for a really enthusiastic kind of a head coach in John Gruden. And so maybe that might apply here with Pete Carroll. There's a lot of things that make Gabe Jackson in particular a very interesting player for the Seahawks.
When we come back in the second quarter, we're going to continue diving into free agency, some under the radar players the Seahawks may take a look at on the offensive side of the football. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, and it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Wednesday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with the Locked On Today podcast. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. As we mentioned last quarter, Rob, we now have 2 weeks until the legal tampering period arrives. And then a couple days later, teams will be able to officially sign free agents. We're getting that close to the start of the new league year. But this is anything but a normal offseason. And we're seeing it with how teams right now are scrambling, trying to open up cap space. There are a number of teams that are more than $30 million over the cap, and they have got to try to figure out how to get back into the black here over the next couple of weeks. So again, I anticipate that we're going to see a lot of other big names hit the free agent market that currently are not free agents. But looking at the free agents that are currently out there, we know how John Schneider operates. He likes to go for the bargain bin. That's what he's been doing for most of his time as the general manager. Very rarely has splurged on big-name free agents. In fact, you might have to go all the way back to Sidney Rice and Zach Miller in 2011 as the last time that they really dove in and spent big bucks on one of the top free agents out there. So we're going to look at some under-the-radar offensive free agents today, players that maybe fans haven't heard about that aren't going to be cashing in with big contracts, but would be good fits for the Seahawks and potentially could be surprise signings when free agency opens later this month.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's going to be interesting to see who Seattle decides to focus in on, because, of course, they have the new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. We don't know exactly what they're going to try to do. I think that if you look at John Schneider's past, as you were just kind of talking about, Corbin, then, you know, I think that it's very unlikely that Seattle is going to be able to pony up the dollars to sign, say, a wide receiver like an Allen Robinson, or, you know, some of the other spectacular receivers that are available this year in free agency, a Chris Godwin, for example. We've talked about some of the great offensive linemen that are set to hit free agency, like a Brandon Scherff, for example. You know, so all of those players, sure, you'd love for Seattle to be able to figure out a way to be able to bring in one of those players, but that's just not realistic. That's not the way that John Schneider has operated in the past. So, you know, to me, I'm going to focus on the offensive line for obvious reasons right off the bat. And I'm not so sure that there is a guard in this year's draft or this year's free agent class at this point that I think is a better fit than the aforementioned Gabe Jackson that we were talking about in the first quarter. I just think that you are either going to be paying premium dollars for somebody like Brandon Scherff, or you're going to be looking for a player who is basically kind of a borderline starter, similar to some of the players that Seattle already had on their roster. They may decide to bring back an Ethan Posick. They may decide to bring back a Jordan Simmons, or just roll the dice with some of the other players that they already have on their teams. Okay. But at the same time, if they are looking to go with an interior lineman who is not only a proven starter, but is actually relatively inexpensive, relatively young, Ted Karras, the starting center from the Miami Dolphins, who at this point is, I believe, only 28 years old. He was a former starter in New England, gambled on himself, actually turned down a longer extension in New England to sign a one-year deal with Miami, and wound up being their starter for all 16 games this past season. And the fact that he had to go through two different quarterbacks, of course, in Tua as well as Ryan Fitzpatrick, then because of that fact, to me, that's the kind of guy that you're looking for, that I think that he might be looking to win. He might be willing to bet on himself. That's something that Seattle has always appreciated in the past. So that's where I would start off with, is if you're looking for an interior offensive lineman who might be a decent fit at a decent value, Ted Karras from Miami might be a good player to watch.
Our listeners are going to be sighing right now when they hear who I've picked on the offensive line, because the first thing I'm going to mention is it's a player that hasn't lived up to his potential because of injuries. And so certainly that is always a big red flag. But going into the 2017 draft, coming out of Western Kentucky, Forrest Lamp was one of my favorite guard prospects entering the draft, and he has had so many issues staying healthy. He tore his ACL before his rookie season started, did not play in any games. The next year, he was mostly a healthy scratch. They were trying to get him acclimated. It was basically his rookie season because he missed the entire year before. Then the next season, he played in a handful of games, and he has a broken fibula that ends his season. Last year was the first season that he's had extensive snaps in the NFL, and he had his struggles, especially in the run-blocking department. Did play over 1,100 snaps for the Chargers, so he's heading into free agency with not much film for teams to look at the NFL level, and when he has played, he hasn't been great. So our listeners might be wondering, why are you trying to sell me on this guy? It's one of those cases where when you look at the strengths of Forrest Lamp's game, when he was coming out of Western Kentucky, Tom Cable was still the line coach for the Seahawks, and the Seahawks had interest, great interest in this player. Ended up going in the second round of the Chargers. There's never been a question about his talent, but he hasn't gotten enough reps to really develop on the field. I think this is one of those one-year prove-it type deals that could end up paying major dividends for you, especially if they're going to be going back towards a more outside zone-centric offensive scheme, which I think they're going to with Shane Waldron as the play caller. Forrest Lamp, one of the big strengths in his game is his agility, his mobility, the lateral quickness. I could see him thriving in this scheme. Again, it comes down to being healthy, but that is the type of player. Seattle has done this several times. We've seen them go after high draft picks that maybe didn't pan out with their first team for whatever reason, and they bring them in. They've had mixed results doing that, but John Schneider is not going to stop throwing darts at the dartboard when it comes to guys that were high draft picks and still could turn their career around. I think Forrest Lamp is still a guy with the right coaching, as long as he can stay healthy, that could be a really solid NFL guard, and I like this scheme fit in Seattle.
No, I do too. And I think that you are describing him well in that he is light on his feet. You know, Western Kentucky was a little bit more of a throw the ball down the field rather than mash it at the point of attack type of an offense. And that might fit in perfectly with what Shane Waldron is looking to do with Seattle's offense. I think that Russell Wilson would be a big fan of it. And again, sometimes you see the Seahawks not focus on the small school players, unless they happen to have a very impressive week of practice at the Senior Bowl. And Forrest Lamp did exactly that. And so I think that that would kind of alleviate some of those concerns that you might have about the so-called small school questions that he may have had. And so speaking from about a player or going from a player from Western Kentucky to one who plays college ball at South Alabama, and again, talking about somebody that Shane Waldron is going to be very familiar with. We talked about the tight end position before, but Gerald Everett, to me, 6'3", 245 pounds. He is not that classic big, bulky tight end who can be not only a pass protector, a pass receiver, but also play at the line of scrimmage and be a mover in the running game. But you already have that player, in my opinion, on your staff in Will Dissly. I think that's where Will Dissly does best. But Gerald Everett can be that move tight end. And if Seattle decided they want to go with a guy who has a little bit of a shorter, squattier frame, maybe has, brings a little bit more punch to the game then Jacob Hollister, who again I think is very much a candidate to be retained. But if he is not, then Gerald Everett, again, because of the familiarity with Shane Waldron, because of his raw talent, and because of how well I think that he and Will Dissly in particular would complement each other, with you hoping that Kobe Parkinson develops into something as well, really could be an interesting fit for Seattle. And again, because I think the guys like Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry from the Chargers, and some of the other tight ends we talked about before, because I think they're going to get the big dollars, Gerald Everett might be relatively inexpensive.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting in terms of free agency. There might be a few guys that get paid, but then there's a huge gap this year, more so than ever before, just because teams don't have money to spend. And maybe there won't be anybody cashing it in like normal. We don't know. We won't know till day one. But my tight end that I've got on my list, I actually have a pair of Buffalo Bills at the receiver and tight end position that I think would be good fits in this offense. At tight end, I've got Tyler Kroft on my list. Now, the last 3 years of the Buffalo Bills, he's missed quite a few games. He dealt with some foot issues his first two seasons with Buffalo. And then last year, he missed some time on the COVID list. And that's unfortunate. There were plenty of players that had to deal with that this past season in an NFL season unlike any other. But he was healthy otherwise, had 3 touchdown receptions last year. In 2017, he had 7 touchdown catches for the Cincinnati Bengals. He's 6'6", 252 pounds. He's got pretty solid blocking ability, both as a run blocker and a pass protector, if he's kept in that capacity. And I think that's going to be a prerequisite to be a tight end in Shane Waldron's offense. They want tight ends that are capable of inline blocking, can move around a little bit, run routes. Kroft's not going to be a guy that stretches the field necessarily, but he can be that safety blanket. He's a capable blocker. And I think in this year's free agency class, especially considering he has missed some time, that he is a player that could be available at a bargain rate that would give the Seahawks some quality snaps at the tight end spot next to Will Dissly and Kobe Parkinson. And at receiver, Isaiah McKenzie. We'll talk about a little spark plug, a guy that has worked his way up from just being a special teams player to last year having 5 touchdown receptions, including one against the Seahawks when the Bills beat him. 5'8", 173 pounds, but he's tough as nails, played his college ball at Georgia. This is a kid that he'll go at it with any corner. He doesn't care who you are. He's feisty. And last year, 190 yards out of his 200 plus yards that he had in the season, more than half his yardage was after the catch. So this is a guy you can get the football out to. He can turn up field, make guys miss, and he can pick up yards after the catch in chunks. And he's also played a lot of special teams, can return kicks. To me, that's the kind of bargain signing. He's 25 years old too, by the way, still a guy that's getting better. He's a player that would make sense for a team that absolutely needs to add depth at the receiver position and could use some more reinforcements in the return game as well.
Oh, that's very true. That's very. I was thinking a similar kind of thing with a more expensive option in Curtis Samuel from Carolina. Now, of course, we all know that you know former Seahawks high-ranking scout Scott Fitter is now the Carolina Panthers general manager. We kind of mentioned earlier that Stephon Sullivan, how Scott Fitter was able to kind of steal him away from Seattle. Well, hey, turnabout's fair play here. I think that Seattle might be looking to try to steal some talent from Carolina. And Curtis Samuel is exactly the same type of player as who you're talking about there with Isaiah McKenzie, Corbin, in that he is dynamic after the catch. This is a guy who can line up as a wide receiver. He can take some snaps at the running back spot or on those fly and jet sweeps. And again, he also is a dynamic return man as well. Now, this is a player that's going to cost a little bit more money. But again, because of the fact that you have so many really good wide receivers in free agency, you have yet another spectacular draft class at the wide receiver position. Then a guy who has struggled a little bit with durability in Curtis Samuel, I think that he might be available to you at a cheaper price than you might think. He is a guy that is more of a utility player than as a true number one. And I think that he would be dynamic in Seattle offense. So to me, he is exactly the type of player that I saw the Rams excel with Brandon Cooks. And so to me, if there is a wide receiver in this draft or in this free agent class that is beyond the obvious names, the Allen Robinsons and players like that, and is a step up above players like a John Ross or somebody like that, that you might just be willing to, you know, kind of see if they're willing to come in on a 1 year kind of approve it deal. If you're looking for somebody kind of in between that, I think that Curtis Samuel could be that superstar the Seahawks are lacking at the wide receiver position, other than, of course, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett.
I think his youth and the fact that he's such a jack of all trades can be moved all over the place. I have a feeling he's one of the few guys that might be a mid-level free agent that still is able to get quite a bit of money on the free agent market. But again, nobody knows how this is going to play out. If he's not getting some of the offers that are anticipated and he's somebody that you can sign for less on a 1 year deal or a short term deal, then absolutely the Seahawks could be right in the mix. And I do think if you're running a Ram style offense, we've seen what they've done with Robert Woods and what they've done with players like Brandon Cooks, as you mentioned, Curtis Samuel would be a lot of fun in an offense like that, especially when he's got DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett also in that receiver room. So it would be a lot of fun. When we return in the third quarter, I'm going to continue our Russell Wilson trade tour. Your boy Q from Locked On Raiders is going to be jumping on. Las Vegas looks like maybe one of the potential favorites if there was going to be a move made, and they've got some interesting pieces that they could send back in a deal. We'll examine that when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including a bunch of different delicious ones such as caramel brownie, cookies and cream, carrot cake, peanut butter, salted caramel. I can keep naming. You're going to have a difficult time eating just one. Every Built Bar is covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for a keto diet. Visit BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON20 and you'll get 20% off your next order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, here on our Wednesday episode. Wednesdays on Locked On NFL take a dive into the future of your favorite NFL franchises. Tony Wiggins and James Rappian are joined every week by a Locked On draft expert to talk prospects in the upcoming draft and young NFL players fresh in the league. Did your team have a big rookie performance this week, or are they shaping up to have a premier draft pick in the 2021 draft? Get everything you need Wednesdays on Locked On NFL. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to continue our Russell Wilson trade tour. We're continuing to go around the nation, all the different teams, the four teams that Russell Wilson apparently would be willing to waive his no trade clause for to play for, the Las Vegas Raiders being one of the four teams on that list. So I'm happy to join forces with your boy Q of Las Vegas, of Locked On Raiders, And Q, I'm just going to start with this question. This has obviously been in a very bizarre situation. Russell Wilson hasn't demanded a trade, but agent Mark Rogers decides that it's worth telling Adam Schefter. But if he does get traded, these are the four teams he would be willing to go to. And the Raiders were on that short list. Now, I'm going to say that one really surprised me for one reason. Tom Cable being the line coach. Everybody knows Tom Cable was the Seahawks line coach for a long time. And those were some of the years that Russell Wilson took the most sacks and was under the most punishment. So that kind of made me scratch my head at first. But then I started thinking, but John Gruden has loved Russell Wilson since he was doing the QB camp with pre-draft prospects. He has been a huge fan ever since Wilson was coming out of Wisconsin. So my first big question for you here, what would the fit look like if Russell Wilson found himself in Las Vegas? And why do you think they are on his short list?
You know, it's interesting because I didn't think of the Tom Cable situation, but a lot of Raider fans were upset when Tom Cable got hired by John Gruden because of everything you mentioned about when he was the Seattle Seahawks offensive line coach and how bad they were. And to our surprise, he's actually been pretty good. You know, he's done really good, especially the last two seasons with the Raiders. So that's one thing that was a surprise to me as well. But it, you know, it ended up working out pretty well. I think that, you know, the appeal of Las Vegas, I think he sees a team that's on the rise. And I do believe the Raiders are on the rise. Do I think that they're a Super Bowl contender right now? No. I think they should have been in the playoffs in 2020, but because of some horrific defensive plays, they weren't. I think that they should have competed to be in the playoffs. But you know, they have a nice new stadium. They're in Las Vegas. I mean, you know, it's a lot to like. I think John Gruden is a guy that a lot of players really do like to play for, you know, even though, you know, everyone goofs on him all the time. But I do think that genuinely people enjoy playing for Coach Gruden, and you kind of hear that across the league. So that's some of the reason. I think he realizes the Raiders have a very good offensive line and that he's going to get protected. Now, I will say a lot of those, and I'm sure you can back me up on this, a lot of those sacks that Russell Wilson takes are kind of the gift and curse of who Russell Wilson is. You know, he's the guy that's going to hold on to the rock a little bit longer and try to make some magic happen. Well, sometimes you've got to just get rid of the ball and live to see another down. So some of those sacks, I'm sure, are on Russell Wilson, and John Gruden would want him to get the ball out of his hands a lot quicker than that. But as far as fit, Russell Wilson, I think, was going to fit with anybody. He's just that good of a quarterback. So I think he would definitely fit. The Raiders have some nice weapons, including Darren Waller. I'm sure he saw that. A nice run game. And as you very well know, when the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, it was a strong, strong defense and a Legion of Boom and a great run game. The Raiders don't have the defense, but they do have a really good run game.
Don't say that too loud for Seahawk fans, because it just seems to kind of have become forgotten a little bit. I think a lot of Seahawk fans are just like, we didn't let Russ cook enough last year, and that's kind of been the missed narrative, is that even when the offense was struggling in the second half, they were still slinging the ball over the place. It just wasn't working near as well, and Wilson was gun-shy the last 2 months. He was not unloading the football, so yeah, that would be something John Gruden, if they somehow did get Russell Wilson, would have to try to get him back on track in that regard. He talks all the time about legacy. So this is kind of going off what you said. You know, you're playing in a new stadium, but the Raiders have won a bunch of Super Bowls. They're one of the most storied franchises, and in some cases, one of the most hated franchises by a number of teams as well. But it's been a long time since they've really been relevant. Only a couple of playoff appearances since their last Super Bowl appearance. And so the idea of him coming to Las Vegas, they're in a new stadium, and getting the Raiders back to the Super Bowl, you want to talk about something that would enhance his legacy. To me, that's probably the other major selling point when you're talking about Russell Wilson. And the franchises that he's got on his list, they are all storied franchises in some regard.
Yeah, all those symbols on the side of the helmets, they all mean something. You know, the Cowboys, the Saints, the Bears, and the Raiders, they're all, it's not the Carolina Panthers. It's not, you know, the Jaguars. It's not teams like that. It's teams that mean something, that are better teams in the league, when, or the league is better when those teams are really, really good. Those teams also, those symbols sell themselves, you know. So there's a lot of business that can be done, not just on the field, but off the field. And we all know that Russell Wilson is a businessman as well as a football player. And of course, he's got a, you know, a career that he's always going to worry about, like you said, that legacy. He would go down, if he could be a Raider quarterback and get the Raiders to the promised land, he would go down as one of the most storied quarterbacks in the history of the team. Because right now, Derek Carr owns a lot of the franchise records as far as yards, as far as touchdown passes. The problem is, not as far as wins. You know, I mean, he struggles when it comes to wins, and not all his fault. A lot of that is the organization hasn't put enough around him. They haven't put him up in the right position. I mentioned in 2020, the defense was horrific. They gave up a record amount of points, as far as franchise record amount of points, which you just can't do. But yeah, Russell Wilson would be looked at as the savior. So you want to talk about legacy. That would be huge. And so I think that there should be interest from the Raiders. I'm sure there is interest whenever the name pops up on Russell Wilson's shortlist, even though it might be, like I tell all the time, the Raider Nation, hey, look, agents love to use the Raiders as far as leverage go. Oh, the Raiders are involved. The Raiders are involved. That goes to all those teams that we just talked about, the Cowboys, the Saints. You know, those teams are always bunched in as far as agent talk goes, because it helps kind of leverage whatever they're doing against another team. You know, I mean, it's not out of the question either. When you say, hey, maybe John Gruden's looking to upgrade, maybe he'd like Russell Wilson, you can't really say like, no, that's not possible, because it is. I mean, Russell Wilson is a very good quarterback, and the Raiders would be blessed to have him. Now, I just don't think that the interest is going to be super like, hey, we're going to sell the farm for this guy. But yeah, we'll make a call and see if he's available.
And that leads me to my big question here. If the Raiders were going to go all in on this, if you are the general manager, Q, and you're like, you know what, Derek Carr's been a serviceable starter, he's done good things for us, but he's not Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson can take us to the next level and give us the best chance to compete with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs long term. If you decide to go all in, what does your trade package look like? What are you trying to get John Schneider's attention with to at least get him to discuss the possibility of trading Seattle's franchise quarterback?
Well, you know, I'd get him on the phone. And my trade package, he'd probably consider disrespectful. He'd probably say, you know what, man, he might not even finish the conversation with me. He might hang up on me. But again, it's because I'm not desperate to get up to move on from Derek Carr. I do know Russell Wilson's an upgrade, but if I'm the GM of the Raiders, I'm calling, like I said, just to see if he's possibly available. And hey, I'm going to throw this offer out at you. And if you say, well, let me think about it, then maybe, you know, then maybe we have a back and forth conversation. But you might just say, hey, this is my franchise guy. There's no way I'm giving him up for just that. And I say, OK, I respect that. Thank you for taking my call. And maybe we'll do business at another time. So I'm looking at Russell Wilson, and I'm looking at his age, which is still very young for a quarterback. He's very mobile. He could do whatever, you know, he wants to do. He's a magician out there. I'm offering Derek Carr, obviously, because you need a quarterback. Derek Carr is not going to have any place if the trade were to happen. Derek Carr is the first guy off the the trade. A 2021 first round pick, a 2022 first round pick, and a 2022 third round pick. And I'm saying that's what I got. And I know it's probably not enough, but that's what I got. And you're getting a quarterback that put up record numbers last year in return, and he's on a reasonable contract. So it may be something that you look at and say, okay, we could talk about it. And if not, again, we have a respectful conversation and we call it a day.
And I'll tell you one reason why that proposal, some of the listeners might be thinking that's not enough first round picks or whatever, but Derek Carr only has a $2.5 million cap hit, dead right. cap hit. Yep. If the Seahawks were to make this trade, to be honest, I think the Raiders financially are the only one, if you're looking at those four teams, that you could match up and you could potentially move Russell Wilson with that $39 million dead cap hit. And you could even do it after June 1st because Carr's still going to be with the Raiders and both teams are going to have a smaller dead cap hit as a result of that. If this really is where this ends up going to, and Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, this is beyond repair, it's time to move our quarterback, then I think the Raiders from that standpoint would make the most sense. And Carr is still a young enough quarterback that you could get a lot of good seasons out of him. He could maybe be more than just a bridge quarterback, just like Dak Prescott would be from the Cowboys, but they've got all the financial issues that the Seahawks would have to try to work around. So I'm just saying this from my standpoint, if I was John Schneider, I would think the Raiders would be the team I would probably call first just for that reason. If I absolutely had to move Russell Wilson, and I would still maybe even try to get the Texans involved and see if I could be like, hey, we'll send Derek Carr to you. You're getting a quality quarterback. We want Deshaun Watson. I don't think that'll ever happen, but that's really what it would take for me to unload a player like Russell Wilson, who's still in the prime of his career. I want another top quality quarterback, and right. Watson wants out. So maybe you could get all three teams involved and everybody gets the quarterback they want. The Texans can still compete with Derek Carr under center and some of the draft picks they would add through that trade. And so there's a lot of moving pieces, but the Raiders, if this really was going to go down, maybe would intrigue me more than anybody else.
Well, you know, and the thing about it is, again, I'd pick up the phone and call Seattle just because my name was on the short list. And I feel like if I don't, it's almost more disrespectful. You know what I mean? Even though I may not be offering, like a lot of the listeners might say, oh, that's not enough, Q, I'm sorry. That's okay. At least I picked up the phone and called and said, hey, this is what I got. And maybe it could work. Maybe it can't work. Cool. Because I'm not desperate. It's not like I'm a team like Chicago that needs a quarterback badly. I feel like I can win with Derek Carr. So if you politely say no to me, or even if you don't, even if you just hang up on me, I still feel like, okay, at least I did my due diligence, and I feel like I at least investigated it and did my job as a GM. And now, hey, it's time to move on and let's go ahead and worry about the draft and put this team together for the 2021 run. So that's why I would offer that and be comfortable with that move right there.
I think there's a lot of logic there, and that's kind of gone over a lot of people's heads during this entire ordeal with Russell Wilson, including Seahawk fans and what they can get back for him. Obviously, top five quarterback, you want to get a ton of draft assets and you want to get another quarterback you can replace him with. You're going to do that. The Raiders could potentially be a fit there. So, again, we have to wait and see. I don't think Russell Wilson's going anywhere in 2021, maybe next year. After this season, depending how things go, if this is still an issue, he could be on the move next season. It would be more financially doable. And maybe at that point, depending what the Raiders season plays out like, maybe then John Gruden and Mike Mayock might be like, you know what, it's time to go get that guy. And maybe this happens next year. But I've greatly appreciated your input, Q, and I guess we'll see what happens maybe down the line if Russell Wilson's still angry. Maybe you and I will hook up again if the Raiders emerge as a potential favorite to get Russell Wilson down the line.
Absolutely. And even if he doesn't, and even if he's the quarterback for the rest of his playing career, man, we need to hook up again anyway. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me on, and I love talking some football with you.
You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. When we return on our Thursday episode, I'm going to be taking a deep dive into Seattle's exclusive rights free agents, going to be playing our Tinder Thursday game. Plus, we'll be wrapping up our Russell Wilson trade tour with Marcus Mosher of Locked On Cowboys. You won't want to miss it. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.